Wasn't that what the two of you were talking about by yourselves? Her giving you the whole, you better treat my daughter right or else speech? Kyoshi supposed that had been a part of the conversation, in a roundabout way. She decided not to mention the particulars.
Avatar Kyoshi,
said a deep, confident voice behind her. She turned around to see a young man swathed in regal gold and black. His hair was pulled back tight, making his large forehead more prominent, and his sharp chin was clean-shaven. Finally, she arranged her features in a welcoming expression that hopefully conveyed the right amount of respect for a foreign head of state. This was the introduction she had to make herself, without help. Fire Lord, she said. Thank you for your gracious hospitality. While she was getting ready, she'd practiced over and over what she would say. From the way the crowd hushed, she could tell many eyes were watching her. I have not been in the Fire Nation long, but already I have been awestruck several times by the natural splendor of your country, and especially the skill of its craftsmen.
Oh, so you've visited the gallery then, he said, grinning. It's our national pride.
There was a slight tug on the back of Kyoshi's dress. She ignored it. She was doing well right now and didn't want to lose her momentum. I did. Might I say, you resemble your departed father, Lord Chaeryu, a great deal? May your reign over the Fire Nation be as glorious as his. A sharp kick to the back of her calf nearly made her buckle.
Kyoshi!
Rongi's voice was a strangled squeak of mortification.
That's not Fire Lord Zoryu.
Ancient History. The crowd had frozen. The waiters had frozen. The sun in the sky halted its arc. The celestial bodies had never seen such a colossal blunder in their thousand lifetimes of watching the Avatar.
I should introduce myself, said the man whom Kyoshi had mistaken for the Fire Lord.
My name is Chaejin. Fire Lord Zoryu is my younger half-brother.
Kyoshi looked around frantically for the real Zoryu. She spotted him, hurriedly working his way through the crowd in her direction, outpacing his own guards. She confirmed it was him like she should have done the first time, by checking his topknot from afar. There it was, the headpiece in the shape of a five-tongued flame. Decidedly not resting in the hair of the man standing before her. Kyoshi grimaced. It was as if this double had selected his appearance to cause confusion. His robes were cut to resemble the silhouette of royal armor, and the gold brocade that hung from his shoulders was a shade that she thought was reserved for the Fire Lord and his immediate family. Apologies for the error, she muttered. She had never heard of Chaejin before and had no idea where he fell in the court hierarchy.
It's understandable. Royal lineages can be confusing. My father was Fire Lord Chaeryu, but he never married my mother. We try very hard to hide our indiscretions here in the Fire Nation, especially to outsiders.
She was too far out on a limb. She didn't know what to say when presented with delicate information like this. She glanced at Rongi for help, but judging from her panicked expression, Rongi didn't have enough rank to speak here. She'd spent all her capital already to warn Kyoshi of her mistake. Kyoshi tried to read how delicate the situation was by glancing at the faces of nearby partygoers. The normally reserved Fire Nationals looked completely aghast. The tension grew thicker and heavier until finally their little bubble was pierced by the arrival of Zoryu.
Avatar Kyoshi,
the Fire Lord said, leaning over slightly from exertion. The hem of his outrageously delicate robe was grass-stained, and his headpiece had tilted out of alignment in his haste to get here. Their meeting had been anything but a graceful drifting together like two leaves in a pond.
Zoryu, Chaejin said.
He genially slapped his brother on the back. I was wondering when you'd get here. I'd like you to meet the Avatar. She thought I was the Fire Lord. Can you imagine?
Kyoshi heard Rangi suck in her breath sharply, and she understood why. Chae-jin had stolen the right of introduction, neglected his brother's title, and improperly touched the Fire Lord, all under the guise of a friendly gesture between family members. If court etiquette was a secret language, then it was finally opening to her, arranging concepts and syllables into sentences she could comprehend.
"How amusing," Zoryu said. "I need to talk to my guest now, Chae-jin."
The statement could have been a warning if delivered right, but the slight crack in the Fire Lord's timbre turned it unsure and plaintive.
Of course," Chae-jin said. "You must have wanted to discuss the recent crop failures or the precipitous declines of the fisheries. If there's anyone who could reverse our country's recent fortunes, it's the Avatar."
The strain in Zoryu's neck reached all the way to his temples. This must have been the problem of national importance he wanted to discuss with the Avatar, but not in such a public venue.
"A malaise has settled over the land since the death of our father, and the natural bounties we used to enjoy during his reign have vanished,"
Chae-jin explained, even though no one had asked him to.
"Some of the older fire sages believe the spirits of the islands themselves are unhappy and have turned their faces away from us."
He smiled at Zoryu.
"I, of course, have argued otherwise. The strength of my brother's rule is not to be questioned."
The way Zoryu clenched his teeth and looked away told Kyoshi there was an element of truth to Chae-jin's claims. Likely not the part where he supported his sibling, though. She knew what she had to do. The favor of the Avatar was the prize here, was it not? Men like Xing traveled across seas for a taste of it. Chae-jin's little game of insubordination and disguise was obvious in hindsight. He wanted Kyoshi to shower respect upon him and criticize the Fire Lord. She didn't appreciate being manipulated, especially by someone she just met. She narrowed her eyes at Chae-jin.
"If there's an issue with the spirits, I will resolve it on behalf of the Fire Lord."
Her ability to communicate beyond the physical realm was sorely lacking, but he didn't need to know that right now.
"He has my full support as the Avatar. Now, if you don't mind, he and I will talk in private."
Chae-jin's mouth fell open.
"I believe I asked you to leave," Kyoshi said. Normally, she'd wait longer before letting the cutting remarks fly. But this was a special case. She was on to Chae-jin's performance, and she wanted the bystanders to see his efforts fail to bear fruit. But instead of suffering the rebuke like Xing, Chae-jin glowed with happiness.
"I believe you did."
He bowed and shuffled away, hurrying like he had to go share the news of their conversation with a friend. That wasn't the effect she'd wanted. Kyoshi turned back to Zoryu. He stared at her like a gutted fish, unable to speak.
"Kyoshi,"
Rangi whispered, nearly catatonic, forgetting that the ruler of her country stood within arm's reach of her.
"Kyoshi, what did you just do?"
She didn't know. It took the laborious, hurried arrival of Haydon to provide an answer.
"What she's done is follow disaster with catastrophe," the headmistress growled once she'd limped her way over. "Everyone, shut up and follow me before you embarrass yourselves further."
Kyoshi fell in behind Haydon. To her surprise, so did the Fire Lord. There was apparently no limit to the people Haydon could boss around. She detected pitying smirks on the faces of the nobles as they passed, but they weren't aimed at her, the ignorant foreigner who'd made a mess of things. They were directed at Zoryu, the man everyone here was supposed to owe absolute respect and fealty to. Whatever fluency she thought she had in court dynamics was being upended. She took one last glance at Che Jin, who was already whispering enthusiastically to another guest. Emblazoned on the back of the Fire Lord's brother's robe was a large stone camellia, wrought in gold thread, meant to be seen like a beacon. The rendition was identical to the one she'd seen in the portrait gallery, only without its smaller peony rival. A single blossom growing strong, with no competition to worry about.
"Kyoshi, move!" Rangi whispered.
They left the mass of the crowd behind them, circling around the palace grounds. As large as the party was, there was still more empty garden where they could have some true privacy instead of counting on people not to snoop. The sparseness of the flowering orchard was more attractive from ground level. The regular spacing between the Zankan cherry and silver wisteria gave the impression of pink and white trees compressing into lines and then expanding again as their viewing angle changed. The Fire Lord moved slowly at Heyran's pace. The stoic, silent royal guards had been dismissed, but Atuat and Jinpa had been pulled away from the party. Kyoshi had ruined the privilege of remaining unchaperoned for everybody in her group.
Wow,
Rangi muttered at Kyoshi. She pressed her fingers to her temples.
If I insulted this Chejin person, I'm sorry, Kyoshi said under her breath. But he was doing much worse, and no one called him out on it. It wasn't Chejin you insulted, it was the Fire Lord.
Rangi could see Kyoshi didn't get it.
You declared in front of a crowd that you would fix a national problem for him. Isn't that my job? Yes, but you're not supposed to express it like that. The smooth running of the Fire Nation stems from the strength of the Fire Lord, both real and perceived. When you help him, you have to frame it as a partnership among equals. Simply claiming you're going to wave your hand and make it all better implies the Fire Lord is too weak to manage the country on his own. Kyoshi had the sinking feeling this information was buried somewhere in the libraries at Yokoya. She might have even read about this very aspect of Fire Nation culture and simply forgotten. She could try and absorb the rules of diplomacy through text, but it wasn't the same as practicing them until they were second nature. One of her past lives could have helped her with the information, too, had she not been so deficient at communing. She imagined Avatar Sito watching her blunder and hurling his hat to the ground. And then, to top it off, you dismissed someone in front of Lord Zoryu, Rangi said. Right of dismissal is the only custom more important than right of introduction.
She ran her hand down the line of her jaw.
This is Chameleon Bay all over again. You charge in face first, wreck the place, and then have to flee with your tail between your legs. I told you minutes before to be careful, did I not?
Getting chewed out by Rangi was always going to be part and parcel of their reunion. Kyoshi just thought it would have taken longer to get around to it.
I'm sorry, she muttered.
They weren't being as quiet as they thought.
It's not the Avatar's fault, Zoryu said. It's mine.
He'd come to a halt by a turtle duck pond. The animals were napping quietly on water so clear they looked like they were hovering in midair. Under a willow tree was a stone bench where Zoryu sat down, contemplating the peaceful scene.
A smaller reception would have avoided this, but at the last moment, I thought I needed a bigger spectacle to enhance my image.
In defense of Kyoshi's first blunder, Chejin and Zoryu were nearly identical in the face, down to the same prominent brow and jut of their chin. At a distance, it would have been impossible to tell them apart. But up close, she could see the Fire Lord was thinner, still a gangly boy underneath his voluminous robes. It was as if someone had sewn two copies of the departed Lord Chaedu, one with less stuffing. Zoryu's attempt to still his features in a regal manner was only half successful. As he gazed into the water, he smiled graciously at his reflection, like someone who would much rather be crying.
"This whole disaster is entirely my mistake, not Kiyoshi's."
"Permission to speak beyond my station, Lord Zoryu," Heidon said. He waved half-heartedly.
"Granted, to you and everyone here."
"It is partially her fault," she shouted.
The sudden noise woke up the ducks and caused them to scatter to the other side of the pond, quacking as they fled.
"Or at least you have to declare so. What kind of Fire Lord preemptively blames himself for everything?"
Permission or not, that seemed overly familiar of Heidon. Unless Zoryu was a former private student of hers. The master-student relationship was one of the few to cut across all boundaries.
"You can't be that mopey little boy I used to teach anymore,"
Rongi's mother snapped, confirming Kyoshi's suspicion.
"Act with the dignity of your position. You've let Chaejin walk over you for far too long without repercussions, and now he thinks he can get away with anything."
Kyoshi watched Zoryu wither under Heidon's scolding and felt a painful stab of recognition.
"Was I like that early on?" she asked Rongi in a low voice.
"Are you kidding me?"
Rongi said with a snort.
"And what's so funny to you, Lieutenant?"
Heidon turned upon her daughter.
"You're telling me you couldn't think of a tactic to prevent the situation? Not even a basic diversion?"
Rongi suddenly blanched. She trembled with a fear that Kiyoshi had never seen before, not when taking on a brutal Leitai champion without her firebending, or fighting a monstrous Shirshu.
"You are responsible for the Avatar in every regard, not just physical safety."
The daughter might have been good at scolding, but the mother was the founder of the entire school.
"Her reputation reflects on yours, and tonight, I overheard an Earth Kingdom man call her a Daofei to her face."
Kiyoshi and Rongi glanced at each other with eyes as wide as plates. They'd kept more than a few details of their journey to themselves. That the rumors were technically true, and Kiyoshi really was a Daofei by oath, was one secret they'd have to work together to keep from the headmistress, for fear of Capital Island setting ablaze.
"I'm also to blame," Heidon muttered. "I shouldn't have left your side, but I was distracted."
She glared at Atuat, who had just finished a skewer of meat she'd taken along from the party.
"What?"
the water tribe doctor said, picking her teeth with the sharp sliver of bamboo.
"I haven't offended anyone tonight. Frankly, I found everyone else's behavior imprudent and shocking."
Jinpa, ever the peacemaker, raised his hands.
"I am extremely confused. I understand court manners are important, but why is everyone acting like the nearest volcano is about to erupt?"
"It's because the very problem I requested the Avatar's assistance with has now become much worse,"
Zoryu said. He turned to Kyoshi.
"I was going to explain everything under more private circumstances."
"Now's as good a time as any," Kiyoshi said. "I trust everyone here." She was willing to take a gamble on Atuat's discretion. Zoryu rearranged his robes so they wouldn't wrinkle, conscious of them for the first time this evening.
"My father, the late Lord Chaedu, was renowned for his exceptional strength and prodigious appetites. Chaejin is probably not my only half-sibling born out of wedlock, but he is the one my father couldn't ignore completely. His mother is Lady Huazo of the Sawan House."
"The Sawan are a powerful clan that controls Ma'inka Island in the eastern part of the country,"
Rongi explained.
It's both one of the most prosperous and heavily fortified territories in the nation outside of the capital. Lady Huazo wasn't here tonight, but many of her relatives were. They were the ones wearing stone camellia patterns, the Saowan family crest. Based on the insignias Kyoshi had seen, the Saowan outnumbered the next two largest factions combined. "What about your mother?" she asked Zoryu. "Where is she?"
"My mother was Lady Sulan of the Kyoso clan," Zoryu said, his lips twisting into a sad smile. "And I never knew her. She died giving birth to me. I'm told she was a lovely and wonderful person, by all accounts."
Kyoshi's throat tightened in sympathy. If royal blood couldn't shield a child from being orphaned, then what chances did the castoffs of the world ever have?
"To avoid dishonoring Lady Huazo and the Saowan clan, my father officially recognized Chejin as his child," Zoryu went on, "but somehow also managed to exclude him from being an official member of the royal family. It placed my elder half-brother in an unclear position when it came to the line of succession, so he was removed from the palace. Sending him away to the Fire Sages was a convenient method to get rid of an embarrassment to the Fire Lord, and my father forbade the matter to be talked about at court while he was alive."
He caught Kyoshi's scowl of disapproval before she could mask it.
"Fire Lords and Earth Kings did worse to their siblings in ancient times, and I've attended performances of Water Tribe sagas with similar themes. In hindsight, I'd have gladly taken Chejin's end of the deal and traded ruling for solitude and study."
"Stop saying things like that," Hadon snapped. "Weakness is practice and learned as much as strength is. What if one of the Saowan were to hear you?"
Zoryu shrugged, a gesture that looked strange when performed by the leading figure of an entire country. His sturdy shoulder pads weren't designed for ambivalence and almost swallowed his head as they rose upward.
"It's too late to be worried. I set the wrong tone with Chejin long ago. After my father's death, when I first heard the Saowan clan were sending Chejin back to court as a high temple liaison, I was delighted. I thought the playmate of my youth was returning, my only living blood relative. But being sent away by our father embittered him."
Zoryu tapped the side of his hair, causing his headpiece to wiggle.
"He came at me wanting his crown. Chejin exploited my initial lenience to show the clans how much kinglier he is than me, and has continued to do so ever since. Tonight was merely one example in a long list of petty jabs and undermining."
"The Saowan have always been skilled at subtly shaping public opinion," Rangi said. She spoke with the weariness of a veteran, more befitting of someone her mother's age. Kyoshi had never seen her act this way.
"Chejin has plausible deniability. He could say that he merely acted with the impertinence of family and wore the wrong clothes. Punishing him for it could look like an overreaction, and the Fire Lord would fall even further in esteem."
"This is what Chejin does," Zoryu said. "He is simply better at this game than I am. And day by day, he comes ever closer to fully winning it."
"I don't understand," Kyoshi said. "So he wishes he was Fire Lord instead of you. Insults and opinions can't change the laws of succession."
"They can when they're backed by enough troops," Zoryu said wryly.
"Chejin was telling the truth. The Fire Nation struggles, Avatar. The harvests have been borderline failures for 2 years in a row. Fishermen pull up empty nets from the shores of First Lord's Harbor to Hanau. We had to call half of the pig chickens in the country due to sickness a few months ago. To most of the common folk, it appears as if my entire reign has been cursed by the spirits of the islands themselves."
He rubbed the back of his neck. Another fidget made ridiculous by his outfit.
Now the noble clans might not believe in curses, but they do need revenues from their fiefdoms to pay their household warriors.
If they can't, then I have a bunch of very angry, unemployed, highly trained fighters on my hands, suddenly willing to entertain the concept of Fire Lord Chejin.
If I may, Jinpa said, respect for the will of the spirits is one thing, but the misfortunes you're describing seem beyond anyone's control. How can the people of the Fire Nation lay these troubles at your feet?
Zoryu snorted. With great ease. My father was an unintelligent boor, but during his rule the rains fell. The fields were green and the fish were so plentiful you could pluck them from the seas by hand. In contrast, I've had to empty the royal treasury to keep some of the poorer islands from going hungry. The Sawan homeland of Ma'inka is faring relatively well these days, which gives my brother even more credibility and influence. He appears to be the son of Cheiryu, better favored by the spirits.
Kyoshi was beginning to understand. You invited me here to bolster your reputation within your own country.
You are correct, Avatar. Granted, I don't expect you to snap your fingers and have spirits fill the barns with grain. But I thought if you stood by me in solidarity during the holiday, it might help settle some of the unrest in the palace.
He made a face of longing for something going right for once.
Chejin hijacked my plan and outmaneuvered me yet again.
You pretty much blessed his future reign, Avatar. In front of the whole court, no less.
I see,
Atuat interjected, tapping her chin thoughtfully, as if she were the intended audience of the explanation.
But you're talking about conflict like an inevitability. Welcome to the Fire Nation, everyone,
Zoryu said with a grin that was equal parts cheekiness and deep, regretful sorrow. Hadon shot him a look that could punch its way through a stack of shields. Zoryu coughed.
What I mean to say is the history of this crown tends to repeat itself. Fire Lord Yosor nearly lost the country to civil war and was only saved by Fire Avatar Sito.
After a certain point, it becomes a matter of strategy over spirits, Hadon said. She stared at the pond, rolling her cane between her fingers. In times of upheaval, every lesser clan wants to ally themselves with the eventual winners. If the Sawan continue to wax in power and reputation, then at some point they'll have enough supporters to openly rebel against the throne.
Chejin works the courts, while his mother Huazo consolidates wealth and power throughout the islands,
Zoryu said.
In the meantime, I lack the political and military resources to check them. The Standing Fire Army is an elite force, but it is small. To win in pitched battle against a clan as large as the Sawan, I'd need the rest of the noble houses committed in lockstep behind me. And that wouldn't happen without an extremely just cause.
He puffed his cheeks in frustration.
This is what I get for not wanting to spill the blood of my countrymen. I have borne the insults of Chejin as best I could, so as not to accelerate us towards civil war. I've traded away my image in bits and pieces, trying to delay the inevitable. But in the eyes of my people, I don't know how much more honor I have left to lose.
Kyoshi pondered the trap the Fire Lord lay in. Genju had once complained to her that the Earth Kingdom was too big to govern properly, but its size meant it could suffer grievous injuries in one quarter and not feel them in the other. The Earth Kingdom's nature was to persist, muddling through floods, famines, bandit uprisings, and incompetent governors.
The Fire Nation, on the other hand, was of the right size to be transformed and consumed by its disasters. Kiyoshi might not have been an expert in court politics, but she was well-versed in the motions of violence and suffering. She could see the Sky Bison's view of war spreading across the map of the islands, and she understood how vicious a close-quarters fight for power could get. Zoryu seemed fairly shrewd to Kiyoshi, and decent enough at heart. It was just, for being one of the most powerful people in the world, he was remarkably powerless. He'd been handed a title by virtue of his birth, and a map to his life, where every route led clearly to a dark, terrible destination. She could sympathize.
"We need to engineer a response," Hadon said. "Chajin went too far tonight. There's plenty of time left in the evening to show him and the rest of the guests where the line is."
She spun around to march back to the party, but the sudden motion left her wobbling. Atuat grabbed her before she fell.
"You need to rest," the doctor said gently. "You're done for the night. I'll take you inside."
Hadon shook her head and gripped her cane tighter.
"The children can't be left alone. Look what happened already."
Atuat's presence seemed to explode in size. Gone was the unserious, diminutive woman, and in her stead rose an implacable spirit of the North itself.
"That's funny," she declared. "I thought I heard one of my patients back-talking me on a health matter just now. It must have been the wind."
Hadon glowered at her friend, but like a master waterbender, Atuat calmly rode the storm until it petered out. Finally, Hadon sighed in surrender.
"Fine."
"Monk," Atuat said, "help me help her back, will you?"
Jinpa, acclimated to taking orders from people he just met, gently grasped Hadon by the arm. He and the doctor led her back to the palace.
"Forget trying to rebuke Chajin for now, then," Hadon called over her shoulder. "Don't do anything until we can come up with a plan. Stick with neutral Jing."
Kiyoshi watched them leave, fascinated. Someone had managed to cow the headmistress, the woman whom both Rangi and Fire Lord Zoryu feared. By this logic, Sifu Atuat must have answered only to the moon and ocean spirits themselves.
"Looks like the children are on their own," Zoryu said, rubbing his eyes.
Kiyoshi looked around. The sudden departure of Hadon and Atuat had put into stark contrast the relative youth of their remaining group. Most of the nobles attending the party tonight were the same age as Rangi's mother, or older.
"I suppose we have to go back," Zoryu said, "though I'd personally rather spend the rest of the evening reading or playing Paisho. Do you play Avatar?"
"I am asked that often." She couldn't keep the note of tetchiness out of her voice. Across the four nations, people equated skill at the game with wisdom. It made her feel like her lack of skill at it was a character flaw.
"The answer is no."
Zoryu winced. "I didn't mean anything by it. I became acquainted with your predecessor over the game."
She had to take a moment to understand he was talking about Yun, not Kuruk.
"You do realize Yun wasn't the avatar before me, technically speaking?"
The corners of Zoryu's mouth turned in opposite directions.
"The Fire Sages would censure me for saying this, but in a certain way, he was avatar enough. Master Yun burnished my image at court and pulled more diplomatic strings from me than any of my ministers. And he made me forget my station in a good way."
"He had a talent for that," Rangi said.
Her eyes were lost somewhere among the reflections in the pond.
His visits to the palace were the only time I didn't feel like I was so alone, Zoryu said. But I understand he was your friend before he was mine. My condolences to you both. The world is poorer without him.
Such a basic sentiment, and yet so rare.
Kiyoshi could count on one hand the sages in the Earth Kingdom who grieved for Yun, the person, instead of distancing themselves from Yun, the mistake.
Thank you, she said, her throat drying out a little. Maybe one day I can be as much of a help to you as he was.
I mean, given how gravely you've insulted me tonight, there's nowhere to go but up,
Zoryu said with a glare she realized was meant to be a wink. He and Yun even had similar senses of humor. Kiyoshi relaxed for the first time tonight. By no one's standards but hers, she and the Fire Lord had gotten off to a good start. The smile vanished from her face when she considered how to break the news to Zoryu that the Earth Kingdom's preferred version of events was a lie. She looked at Rangi, who bit her lip.
Yun being alive was too much to drop on Zoryu tonight, Kiyoshi decided. Perhaps once they found more leads.
There was no point in telling the Fire Lord that their friend had been swallowed up by the mainland, forgotten, until they could do something about it.
The three of them walked back to the party, Rangi occasionally tugging on the back of Kyoshi's robes to make sure she followed the requisite distance behind Zoryu.
There was a completeness to their formation she appreciated. She remembered Chancellor Daiden's warning about the flowers.
Lord Zoryu, she said, is the Kyoso clan sigil the winged peony, by any chance?
Yes. That's the symbol of my mother's family. Why do you ask?
She told him about the stencils on the portrait of his father, the Sawan's flower ascendant over the Kyosos. Zoryu swore in a manner very unbecoming of a head of state and clawed the air like he wanted to strangle someone.
Wonderful. Now the royal artists are disrespecting me, he said. Chaejin must have struck a deal with them. I'll have to replace the painters and have the images covered before any Kyoso hardliners see it and go berserk. Chaejin's other goal is to provoke someone in the Kyoso clan into committing an inexcusable act of violence against a Sawan. Then he has the just cause for starting a conflict. History would say he was defending his honor.
Zoryu sighed.
Clan rivalries have been a major impediment to the progress of the Fire Nation since its inception. My mother's side of the family despises the Sawan and would rather burn the country down than accept Chaejin as their ruler. Sometimes I wish I could abdicate. If it weren't for the violence the Kyoso would create in my wake.
Kiyoshi continued to be surprised by Zoryu's frankness. He was less power-hungry than some small-time mayors she'd met in the Earth Kingdom.
It's a very air nomad idea, she said. Running away, following the path of negative Jing. Maybe it's a wise course.
She heard the smack of Rongi's hand colliding with her own forehead.
Spirits of the islands, Kiyoshi, you can't just encourage the Fire Lord to abdicate.
Please don't tell your mother I said that, Lieutenant, Zoryu said, suddenly and genuinely worried.
She'd beat the idea out of me. I still break out in cold sweats when I think of her training programs.
Kiyoshi snickered. It had been a very long time since she'd connected to anyone her age. It was strange to think she could relax around a smuggling gang and the ruler of the Fire Nation, but nothing in between.
We're getting closer to the party, Rongi lilted under her breath. So could I please ask the two most important people I will ever serve in my life to start acting appropriately?
The Avatar and the Fire Lord straightened up, neither wanting to incur her wrath. Evening had settled,
and torches had been lit to cast a gentle glow over the festivities. The crowd was still dense, forming a grove of red silks over the pavilion. The only sound was the chirping of insects drifting over the warm air. A peaceful scene.
"Stop," Kyoshi said. It was a Daofei's suspicion that made her come to a halt, but the feeling was strong.
"Something's off."
"What is it?"
Zoryu said.
"I don't hear anything."
Rongi had noticed it too.
"Exactly. It's too quiet."
She slid in front of Kyoshi and Zoryu, the marching order of rank no longer as important as protecting her charges. The conversations that filled the air earlier had completely died out. The nobles were standing still, silently watching them arrive. Zoryu had talked about a tipping point where he lost too many supporters and the clans turned against him. But there was no way it could have happened while they were gone. Could it?
"Do you know what's going on here?" she whispered to Zoryu.
He shook his head. Kyoshi advanced on her own for a better look. The men and women of the court were angry and confused, but most of all, they were utterly terrified. They stood at fearful attention, rigid like their lives depended on it. A crying waiter moved to wipe a tear, but quickly caught himself, snapping his arms back to his side. A sickening familiarity bloomed in the pit of Kyoshi's stomach. She'd seen this kind of behavior once before, when the pirate queen of the Eastern Sea had plucked Earth Kingdom natives from their villages and forced them to do her bidding upon pain of death.
"What's wrong with them?"
Zoryu called over Rongi's shoulder.
"Why are they acting like that?"
"They're hostages," said a familiar voice. "How else are they supposed to act?"
Kyoshi felt her chest being squeezed by powerful, invisible jaws, sharp fangs threatening to pierce her through in every direction. He hadn't spoken at the tea house in Qin Chao. Hearing him now, after so long, was an incantation that slowed her senses. Up high, Yun sat on the edge of the Avatar's dais, letting his feet dangle over the side. He was dressed for the occasion in fine robes of green and black, looking every bit like a secret prince out of Earth Kingdom fables, hidden until the moment of his glorious ascension. Except for his one hand. It was still stained a rotting gray, like a dead thing affixed to his body. Yun beamed at her, the same easy smile she knew from her dreams and nightmares alike.
"It's good to see you again, Kyoshi."
The crash. For all her desperate wishing, Kyoshi had never considered what she would actually say to Yun once she found him. He had been like the peak of a mountain, visible when she closed her eyes, attainable so long as she ignored the impassable terrain in between them. Now that he was here, she was too afraid to speak. The wrong word could pierce the illusion and send him away.
"If you're wondering what I'm doing here, I have a standing invitation to attend any and all festivals of Sito from my good friend, the Fire Lord," Yun said. He waved cheerfully at Zoryu, and then feigned disappointment at the bewildered silence he received in return.
"Oh, come on, Zoryu. Don't tell me the offer was rescinded simply because you thought I was dead."
"Yun," Rongi said. "Get down from there, now."
She was both calm and stern, as if she'd caught him picking fruit from a tree he didn't own. But at the same time, she also shifted more of her body in between him and the Fire Lord. Yun noticed the motion and gave her an unreadable smile.
"Hi to you too, Rongi."
"Let's go inside, Yun," she said. "We'll talk."
He scrunched his nose.
That would have been nice, but I'm afraid I've already committed to a different line of play.
He pointed to a lady in a voluminous pink gown near the dais, who shuddered at his attention.
Madam, give a curtsy to my friends, will you?
The woman sniffled and lifted the hem of her skirts. Underneath, her feet had sunk into the ground, the earth swallowing her up to the ankles. Kiyoshi whipped around, looking at the other guests. Their long formal robes hid their feet from sight. But there were inches of bunched-up cloth puddled around every single one of them. The entire party had stepped into quicksand under the control of her friend's earthbending.
You have to hand it to Fire Nation folk, Yun said to Kiyoshi. I threatened them once and explained that if they moved or made any noise, I'd make them regret it. And you know what? They were smart enough to comply. I didn't have to make any examples out of them. Don't you just love the discipline of these people?
His expression darkened.
Earth Kingdom citizens would have blustered and yelled, How dare you? Don't you know who I am?
I swear, Kiyoshi, our countrymen can be so annoying sometimes. I would have just... He squeezed his hand, making a snapping, twisting motion. It was a gesture of frustration, similar to the one Zoryu had play-acted earlier. Only this time, Yun had a whole garden full of people in his grasp. The woman in pink screamed as she sank farther into the ground, up to her waist.
How could he do this?
Holding people hostage was a line Kyoshi thought she and Yun shared, a distinction between them and their foes. Tagaka's slaving raid had been what provoked Yun to confront her.
Kiyoshi! Rangi shouted.
They'd been through enough together for Kiyoshi to know exactly what Rangi was trying to communicate.
Do something. Unfreeze. Now is your chance. Take him down.
But her body wouldn't move with the same certainty as Rangi's. Kiyoshi had to fight her paralysis simply to get her fans out. While she fumbled with her weapons, Yun leaped over her head to the ground and slipped into the frozen crowd. Kiyoshi ran after him, cursing herself for such a clumsy, terrible draw. Wong would have disowned her from his operatic lineage had he witnessed it. She moved through the forest of people and felt the weight of their stares on her, some pleading with her to save them, many furiously accusing her of bringing this misery and humiliation to their door.
So, Kiyoshi.
She spun around, swinging her closed fan in a backhand strike. Yun evaded the blow by leaning back, using a nearby Fire Nation minister as cover, the way a swordsman fighting a duel in a bamboo grove might use the plants as a check on his opponent's blade. Kiyoshi barely halted her motion in time before she cracked the poor man across the mouth. Yun glanced at her fan, and then her. His eyes wide, his posture still angled.
Well, this is a first for our friendship, he said. You just tried to hurt me.
She ignored the burning sting in her cheeks and thrust her weapon at his chin, but he swayed effortlessly to avoid it. She knew he'd received unarmed combat training, from Rangi herself perhaps, and it showed in his decisive movements. She aimed a series of alternating stabs at his head and body.
Really?
He said, dancing with her like he'd been born a non-bending fighter.
After I dealt with Janju for you, this is the thanks I get.
The tips of her fans wavered. Yun had earthbent a rock through Janju's chest, but it was Kiyoshi who'd held him in place.
Remember the look on his face as he died?
Yun grinned as if he were reminiscing over fire lilies instead of the time the two of them killed a man together.
Oh, I'd bottle it if I could.
In Qinqiao, Yun had fulfilled Kiyoshi's intent. Watching him remember the deed and savor it so was like staring into a mirror that revealed her own ugliness. She couldn't escape the crinkles of Yun's eyes, the satisfied contours of his mouth. Had she looked the same, standing in front of Janju's body? She noticed a Fire Navy officer behind Yun inhale deeply through his nose,
seeking to aid her with a precision shot of fire from his fingers or mouth. He was trying to offer her another opening.
Kiyoshi made eye contact with the uniformed man and shook her head. It was too risky. She had to talk her friend down.
"Why are you doing this?" she shouted. "Tell me what it is you want."
The reversion to their old roles calmed him, the servant trying to meet the master's needs.
"Kiyoshi," he said gently, "I want the same gift you received."
Avatarhood? The house in Yokoya? One she couldn't give, the other she cared so little about, she'd have volunteered to draw up a transfer deed right here and now. He saw her confusion and leaned in to clarify.
"Justice, Kiyoshi," he whispered. "I want justice. Everyone who lied to me is going to suffer the consequences."
"But Genju is already..." He shook his head.
"Genju was only the biggest name on a long list. Your mistake, Kiyoshi, was that you stopped at him. My mistake was that I didn't save him for last."
Yoon knelt down and placed his palm on the grass. He tilted his head and hummed.
"The guards have come out and surrounded the party. Finally, I expected faster reactions from the Fire Nation's best."
Kiyoshi's eyes widened. She thought she'd been buying time, but he'd been wasting hers. The whole spectacle of trapping the court where they stood had been a distraction to empty the palace.
"I think it's time I paid respects to my old Sifu,"
Yoon said. He winked at Kiyoshi and dove into the ground. The hard-packed soil swallowed him as easily as the surface of a lake. She threw herself after him, scrabbling at the hole he left behind. It was filled with loose and crumbly castings, like a Shershu's tunnel. Yoon's disappearance was the signal for general chaos to erupt. The nobles burst into screams, flailing and yanking at their legs, trying to free themselves. Palace guards flooded in between the rows of trapped guests. Kiyoshi squeezed her way toward the edge of the gathering, shaking off the forest of hands trying to clutch onto her like a life raft.
"Rangi!"
In her panic, she nearly elbowed an angry nobleman in the face before emerging into the clear once more.
"Rangi!"
In the distance, she saw Rangi hustling Zoryu into the arms of an arriving squad. The dazed Fire Lord disappeared into a phalanx of spears and spikes. Only after Zoryu was safe inside the formation did she break away and run toward Kiyoshi.
"Where is he?"
Rangi scanned the roiling crowd for Yoon.
"Where did he go?"
"A long list. Everyone who lied to him. During their time together in Yokoya, Genju had filled Yoon's head with untruths about who he was and what he could do. So had someone else. Someone who demanded that he firebend. Heiran."
"He went inside the palace," Kiyoshi yelled. "Rangi, he's going after your mother."
Rangi was a blur. She nearly scorched several bystanders with the jets of flame that shot from her hands. She extended her arms behind her, using the force to boost the speed of her bounding steps. Kiyoshi followed as fast as she could. There was no use telling Rangi to wait. One of them had to reach Heidan before Yoon did. They tore past startled and indignant nobles, many of whom wanted to accost the Avatar for the harrowing experience they'd been put through tonight. As they neared the palace entrance, she saw the exit of Yoon's tunnel. He'd already made it through the doors. They barreled into the hallway, scraping paint off the walls and leaving smoke trails on the floors. Rangi led her to a section of the guest wing near the portrait gallery that Kiyoshi hadn't visited yet. Plainer than the Avatar's quarters, but still lavishly decorated with baubles of Fire Nation history. When they came to the room at the end, Rangi brought her hands around and blasted the door open, nearly taking it off its hinges. The force of their entrance scattered a tea set across the floor and sent Jinpa's robes flying over his head.
From the smell of roasted flour in the air, he had been in the middle of serving Atuat and Heyran tea in the air nomad style, using borrowed ingredients from the palace kitchen. Atuat was the first one to stop screaming in surprise.
"What is wrong with you two?" the doctor said. "You could have injured us."
"Did you see him?" Rangi said. "Was he here?"
"See who?"
"Yun. Yun is here, in the palace."
The name didn't fall into place for the doctor. Jinpa, once he yanked the upturned layers of orange and yellow cloth off his face, looked to Kiyoshi, confused that the man she'd been writing so many letters about in the Earth Kingdom was in the Fire Nation. And Heidan simply closed her eyes to wait. Kiyoshi and Rangi both spun around to face the doorway. It smoked from their entrance. The clamor of bells could be heard, bouncing through the hallways, signaling an intrusion. The seconds passed by like cricket snails. It occurred to Kiyoshi that if Yun didn't know the way to Heiran's room, they'd certainly left markers for him, a scorched, smashed path leading right to his target. But the assault never arrived. They heard a prolonged screech that sounded like a bird being clumsily slaughtered. Rangi cocked her ear at the sound.
"That came from the portrait gallery."
"Stay here," Kiyoshi said. She ventured carefully into the ruined hallway and stepped as quietly as she could through the maze of corridors, using what she could remember of the displayed antiques as her landmarks. She arrived at the gallery and was greeted by the sight of Yun standing in the middle of the vast room, holding the limp body of Liu Beifong by his robes.
"The old man's got a set of lungs on him,"
Yun said, digging a finger of his free hand into his ear. He dropped Liu to the floor with a thud, the sound of a head bouncing against a hard surface, wrenching a shudder from Kiyoshi.
"I took a wrong turn," Yun said. "You beat me to Heyran because I took a wrong turn. Can you believe it?"
Yun's face distorted with a fury Kiyoshi had never seen on him, as if losing his way in the palace was a worse experience than any he'd suffered.
"I've been here before, way more times than you. That awful red room used to be mine. Funny how fate works, isn't it? But at least I got a consolation prize."
He kicked Liu's body, folding it across the floor. The leader of the Beifong family had been Zhenju's Sifu, which meant he was considered Yun's as well, by the rules of teaching lineage and deference.
"Did you know that without the old coot's backing, Zhenju would never have been able to declare me the Avatar?"
Yun said, calmed by the act of disrespect.
"Liu was partly responsible for what happened to us, in his way. Ending him was good, but Heidan will be even better."
This wasn't him. This couldn't be the same person. The cave he'd disappeared into had spit out a simulacrum, an inhuman spirit wrapped in Yun's skin.
"She's Rangi's mother,"
Kiyoshi cried.
"And Rangi's our friend. There are costs to this, Kiyoshi. I thought you knew that. After Zhenju, I thought you understood the price of justice."
He spoke with such concern, like he was comforting a victim of inevitability, a person trapped before the flood, the earthquake.
"You should take Rangi away, so she doesn't have to watch her mother die. I plan on finishing my business in the Fire Nation before the end of the festival. It's your choice if the two of you are here for it."
Kiyoshi heard footsteps clattering from the other end of the gallery. Chancellor Dairin had rallied a contingent of guards, blocking off the far exit. From the way his eyes darted to the walls, his first priority was the safety of the paintings, not the well-being of anyone near them. One of the soldiers stepped forward to launch a barrage of fire fists.
"No!"
Dairin screamed, hurling himself over the woman's arm.
"No flames!"
Yun stood trapped between the Avatar and the palace guard.
"Stand down,"
the squad captain shouted at him. You're surrounded, and you have nothing to bend with.
He glanced at Kiyoshi one last time before his face layered itself back into the public figure. The charmer. The showman. He held his hands up for his new audience.
As a matter of fact, I do.
Yoon beckoned with his fingers, and on one side of the gallery, the fire avatars began to dissolve. The crowns of their heads dripped down the walls, leaving clear wooden backings behind. The brilliant colors of the portraits bled away from their stencils, like wax thrown onto a bonfire, and pooled into indistinguishable clumps of reddish brown that floated.